Hungry Hill, written by Daphne du Maurier and read by Maureen O'Brien.
Book 1, Copper John, 1820 to 1828. Chapter 1. On the 3rd of March, 1820, John Broderick set out from Andriff to Dunhaven, intending to cover the 15 miles of his journey before nightfall. It was typical southwesterly weather, the clouds travelling low and the soft, blustering wind bringing scattered showers that fell heavy for 5 minutes and then passed, leaving a space of blue no larger than a man's fist in the sky, with a glimpse of a sun that promised nothing. The road in those days was rough and uneven, and John Broderick, swinging from side to side in the chaise, called to the postboy to have a care, unless he wished to break the bones of the pair of them and land in the ditch for the night with no supper into the bargain. There was constant talk of a new road being built, but there the matter ended, like everything else in the country, and never a penny would come from the government for the improvement of the roads. The expense in the long run would fall upon himself and the other landlords. The trouble was that none of the others had energy enough to put their hands in their pockets, and if they were prevailed upon to do so, would oblige with so ill a grace, and with such a pother of words about the hardness of the times, the arrears of rent, and the slackness of their tenants, that it would save time and temper to leave the matter alone, and let the road become little better than the bogs around Killeen. However, the elections were pending soon in Slane, and if Hare wished to hold his seat, which no doubt he did, John Broderick would put it to him pretty forcibly that votes were not given for nothing, and certainly not for ministers to sit in London twiddling their thumbs and neglecting their own country. How few men of enterprise there were when all was said and done. It was not a question of conceit, but he could think of no other man but himself who would have achieved what had just been done that day in Andriff, and who would have had the vision in the first place to know that such an undertaking was possible. "Too risky," old Robert Lumley had said in the beginning, shaking his head and bringing up objection after objection, how they would never get a return for their money and would all be beggared and be forced to sell their land. "Risk?" John Broderick had answered him. "Why, no doubt there is a risk, just as every day in every man's life he risks breaking his neck when he steps outside his door. I grant you the expense in sinking the mine will not be trifling. Machinery will be necessary. Much labour will be required, and I admit freely that the land here is a different proposition from that of Cornwall, where they shovel and wheel out ore as fast as they can put it in a barrow, whereas we shall not be able to break an ounce without gunpowder. But the copper is there, ours for the taking. One of the most experienced directors of mines in Cornwall, a Mr. Taylor, has been over the ground with me this past week, and his opinion of the place is the same as my own. There is a fortune awaiting us on my property, Mr. Lumley, and on yours. If you are agreeable to forming a private company under my direction, and mark you, according to the conditions I have just shown you, which my agent has drawn up, you can see well for yourself I shall be risking more than you, then I can promise you that within a few years your royalty will be more than £1,000 a year. If you would rather not be a party to the agreement, then there is no more to be said." And he had risen from his seat, gathered his papers together, and made a signal to his agent that there was nothing further to discuss. He had got halfway across the room before Robert Lumley called him back. "My dear Broderick, there is no need to be hasty. There are naturally one or two points that require clarifying before I make my final decision." And then they had sat down once again, and patiently gone over everything that had been gone into 20 times before, with old Lumley quibbling at his already gross percentage. At last the agreement had been signed, the papers sealed, hands shaken, and some refreshment taken in the old library at Castle Andriff, with John Broderick impatient to be gone, now that his object had been achieved, but forced to stay and exchange a few words with his host for common courtesy's sake. "I shall hope," he said, "to see you at Clonmere whenever business brings you to Dunhaven. My daughters will be delighted to welcome you, and my sons to give you some sport with your gun.